Welcome to Vital Signs. I'm Jen Godet, your fearless host, and we're here to talk about your greatest asset, your health. Today, we're going to dive into something deeply human: writing. Not writing for perfection or publication necessarily, but writing for clarity, healing, and purpose. What if one of the most powerful tools we have for mental health isn't a pill or an app, but a pen and a piece of paper? Joining me today is Laura Joan Cornell, writer, coach, and founder of Divine Feminine Yoga, whose work helps people to reconnect with their voice, their creativity, and their emotional well-being through writing. Welcome to the show, Laura.
Hi, Jen. I love your enthusiasm, and I agree. It's human to write, 100%.
Yes. I'm really glad that you're here because this is a compelling topic, and it's so timely. But I'm going to start and just dive in. So many people say writing helps them to clear their head. Yeah. What's actually happening in the brain and nervous system when we write?
Great question. So we are slowing things down and we're growing what they say in yoga is called the witness consciousness. So this is actually a level of our being that connects us with divinity. And when I studied yoga teacher training many years ago, 30 years ago, my teacher said that the strongest form of spiritual practice is the ability to self-observe without judging. So when you pick up that pen, you're slowing down your thoughts and you have the ability to see them on paper. But even just the act of, even if you never go back and read what you wrote, just writing it down, you are observing a thought. And then you're not so attached to it. You get just that tiny bit of distance from it that softens it. So if it's a painful thought, it's not as painful. If it's a happy thought, you can still enjoy, you can embody the joy of the thought.
You know, that's so true. And it's funny because one of the things that I personally have experienced is when I feel jumbled inside, it's because too many things are happening all at once. It's almost as if there's too many thoughts for me to even focus and process. But when I do write pen to paper. When I do a brain dump or I write pen to paper, it's almost as though I can see them more clearly. Is that similar to this witness consciousness that you're talking about?
Yes, I love that word brain dump. So if you think about meditation, it's slowing the thoughts down. They're never going to go away. We are creative beings. Our brain is meant to think. That's its job. And yay, we have a brain. I'm glad I have a brain. But when we dump the chaos, if you have a very chaotic mind and a lot of thoughts may be competing for your attention, when you dump them onto a piece of paper, it does slow it down enough. And then you can observe them. You have the choice to go back and say, which of these thoughts is the most important? Which one do I want to focus on? It slows it down, and that in itself is calming.
I really love that. Thank you for sharing. And so let me ask you the next question, because a lot of times journaling is recommended. It's recommended by therapists. It's recommended by mental health practitioners and professionals. It's recommended by life coaches and even business coaches. So why is journaling recommended so often? What is it that we're hoping to get from that experience?
Well, there's a form of emotional processing that happens. So let's say you're having a strong emotion, something you might go talk to a therapist about, a loss, a difficult day. When you write it down, it's a form of processing the emotions, processing the sadness, processing the frustration, processing the happiness, the curiosity. And that integration of our experience, that digestion of our experience helps to release it so we're not so overloaded. We're not so overwhelmed. And there is research that shows that just a simple journaling practice, let's say 3 mornings in a row of writing, will reduce anxiety, will reduce depression.
Wow, that's pretty powerful. So let me go with the first objection that I always hear, because I have recommended, because it works for me so much. When people ask me, well, how do you do this? I always tell them, well, I personally brain dump at the end of my business day and at the end of my day, because I can't sleep otherwise. My brain never would stop. And so I often suggest it. And the thing that they tell me is, I'm not a writer, Jen. So when someone says, I'm not a writer, what are they actually saying?
It could be a couple of things. It could be that when they were in school, they got a lot of red marks on their paper, you know, the teacher putting X's And I think that's just old, and that's an outdated way of being a teacher anyway, right? But teachers, we're there to bring the best out in our students. And so red X's don't help. Somebody who didn't get amazing grades. I know for myself, I did not like writing when I was in school. So I didn't think of myself as a writer either when I was in school, even though when I was a little girl, I used to write a little bit of poetry. I used to draw, you know, illustrate books and give them to my grandmother for Christmas. I still didn't think of myself as a writer. And I think it was because there was so much pressure in school to do the right kind of essay and to give it to the teacher, or to write a paper in college and pull an all-nighter, which was so unpleasant and so bad for your body. So then you have this memory that I don't like that. Mm-hmm. Whereas if we can let writing be something that is nourishing for us, I think everybody's a writer. And so what I would say is I teach something called embodied flow writing, where you get into your body, you go for a walk. And I love it that you do it at the end of the day. I often do it at the beginning of the day. I'll do my yoga practice. I'll sit and meditate. There's my couch. I have a little blanket if it's cold, but I sit on this couch just even 5 minutes. Take some slow, deep breaths. What is alive for me today? And write it down. And it's very pleasurable. Just try it.
I love it. That's a great way to do it. And so I definitely see the movement, because when we change our physiology, we change our psychology, it just happens. So that movement, that breathing helps us to kind of settle in a little bit. It calms the mind as well. And it actually prepares us. So let me ask you, we've talked about a couple of things. We've talked about, you know, I brain dump for a couple of different reasons. Sometimes it's to get the thoughts so that I can actually prioritize or solve a problem. Sometimes it's, you know, to kind of get rid of whatever's in my head emotionally or otherwise. And so is there a difference between writing to express your emotions and embodied writing versus writing to prioritize or solve problems, or you know, the way that I have tended to see it from a brain dump standpoint?
They do serve different purposes. And believe it or not, I have a lot of different journals and they're different colors. I used to have only one journal, but I have one that I'll put my morning meditation practice in, or any spiritual insights that I have. I have another that's just for work. And so that's where I create my lists, things I want to say to my assistant, things I want to remember, my to-do list. And I think lists are a great form of writing, and they get the stress out of the brain of everything you have to do. So then it is a brain dump of, I got to get this done. I have another journal where I take notes when I'm with clients, another one I'm with studying from teachers. And there's research that people who take notes by hand retain more of what they learned from that teacher or that lecture than if they were typing their notes. Interesting. So I have one journal, it's actually purple, where I took notes when I'm watching webinars or studying with teachers. I have another where, as I said, partner journal. So I keep different journals for different purposes.
You know, this can be sounding, I know what's coming is everybody's like, wow, that's a whole lot of different journals. This is kind of overwhelming.
I used to have one, and you can do that. You can have one, but then I like it because I keep my journal for my meditation practice. There it is. There's my pink journal when I'm sitting and meditating. And then I like the notes with my team. That's a separate one. And I just have a drawer for like three journals.
I totally get it. But for the people out there who are watching, for everybody who's watching and going, okay, yes, I am like Jen and I've got 50 million thoughts in my head. It's all a jumble and I can't focus. So I want to start this. Or maybe it's somebody who's processing emotions and they're like, you know what, I'm going to try this because if it will slow it down enough, I want to start. So if somebody wants to start a
And yeah, just write, put on a 5-minute timer, and it could be, how am I feeling today? What am I grateful today? What do I want to accomplish tomorrow?
That's fantastic. So I just want to say this louder for everyone in the back. It is not that hard to start this practice, but it has so many benefits for your mental health, for your emotional processing, for your ability to solve problems and really get focused. So if you're like me and you're like, I'm a little overwhelmed by all the things, today is the day. And I strongly recommend you follow that. Like, pick up a journal, pick up a journal and something that you like in a color that you like. And then what am I feeling today? What am I grateful for? And what is it that I want to accomplish today? Those are very simple. And I would add no editing and no judging. Doesn't matter how you're feeling, just write it. It doesn't matter what it is that you want to do. It's only about awareness and giving yourself that slow, safe space so that you can start the practice. And what we heard earlier, Laura said it only takes 3 days consecutively of doing this to have a positive impact on your mental health and well-being. So sometimes the answers we're searching for aren't inside of us. They're just waiting to be put on the page. We do have to take a brief break, but after the break, we're gonna talk about writing through transitions. What happens when maybe I'm going through an identity shift, retiring, empty nesting, any of the things that happen and our purpose gets shaken. Stick around, we'll be right back. Welcome back to Vital Signs with me, Jen Godet. Want more of what you're watching? Stay connected to this show and every Now Media TV favorite, live or on demand, anytime you like. Download our free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and unlock nonstop bilingual programming in English and Spanish. On the move? Prefer podcasts? You can catch the podcast version at www.nowmedia.tv. From business and news to lifestyle, culture, and more, Now Media TV is streaming around the clock, ready when you are. But without further ado, let's dive right back into our topic for today. Sometimes when people retire, when we sell a company, when we have a loss of a loved one, or maybe when we send our kids off to college, we experience something unexpected. A loss of identity and or purpose. Why am I here? Major life transitions can shake our sense of purpose, but writing may help people process change and rediscover meaning. Laura is here. She works with individuals navigating these moments exactly. So Laura, I want to dive in. Why do transitions, empty nesting, career change, retirement, often trigger emotional uncertainty and sort of a identity crisis?
Yeah. Well, thank you, Jen. We get so much of our identity from our daily activities. And if you've been in a habit of a job, a career, a family, a relationship, and all of a sudden it ends, there's going to be a huge sense of loss that will kick up an identity crisis. Very, very common. So we have our daily routines and we're used to them. We have our identity. I'm a teacher. So when you stop being a teacher, you're like, who am I? I'm a corporate executive. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm an author. I'm a program leader. I'm a mom. I'm a daughter. And there's a loss of that identity. That's one piece. There's also a loss of contribution. So you were contributing at work and feeling like you were making the world a better place through your job, which is how we get a lot of our sense of purpose, or through raising a kid, or through being a daughter. And then when that's gone, there's this huge hole. And I would say also we have relationships. We have relationships at work. We have friendships. And we're human beings. And our strongest need as human beings is to belong. And we get a lot of that from just simple everyday relationships. So when that shifts, there's a huge sense of loss, of course.
Absolutely. I mean, I've experienced it personally. I retired medicine. And even though I went into a different form of serving, I thought I would be okay, right? And then a couple of years later, it hit me, wow, what I spent 20 years of my life doing, I'm no longer doing in that fashion. And so it really does happen, folks. It's a reality. I remember when my daughter went off to college, the first 6 months, my husband and I were like, well, we can finally focus on us. And then 6 months later, we were sitting on the couch going, well, shoot, what the heck do I do now? She doesn't need us anymore. And so this is real. It impacts all of us. So talk to me, Laura, about what role writing could play in helping people rediscover purpose during and or after these major life shifts.
Well, any transition, we have a loss of how we've spent our time, our loss of contribution, our loss of relationships, but there's also an openness and a freedom. As you said, there can be joy. And we need to rediscover what we love and what's going to bring us purpose in the next phase of our life. So in writing, we can write about things like, what have I loved in my past? What did I love before I had that job? What did I love before I was a mom? What do I love beyond being a daughter and my relationship with my mom? Let's say somebody has died, because that was one of the ones you mentioned. So journaling helps us to anchor into what we love. And that is a goalpost, a signpost towards our new sense of purpose. And then what are my new dreams? And as you, over a series of days, you're not going to rediscover your identity in one day. But as you do this over a series of days and then go on walks and talk to your friends and tell them about your new dreams, you can anchor in new dreams through writing. And I find writing is one of the best ways to rediscover our purpose. You're putting it on paper and then in conversations and then taking small steps. And writing can give you courage. You're like, okay, what's one step I'm going to take today in the direction of my new dreams? Okay, I wrote it down. I better do it. It helps you. It's a way of holding yourself accountable.
It really is. And so let me dive into that a little bit more, because some people are like, that sounds a little bit woo for me. It's not woo, folks. It's research backed. Like, we have found there's tons of research about this. And so, Laura, like, when you talk about this, one of the questions that I've gotten in the past is, well, I sit down and I have no idea what the next chapter looks like, or even what I want it to look like for me. So for those people who are like, I have no idea what I want this to look like for me, I can't even start to dream, I don't have they feel just like they're adrift, what would you suggest to them?
What you're describing is a form of grief. And I would say grief takes time. I mean, when I lost my mother, I grieved really heavy for like 6 months. My brain was foggy for 3 months. There's a period where I couldn't remember words as well. They came back like a year later. But if you're feeling very, very adrift and you can't even imagine your next life, I would say just give yourself grace that it's okay to grieve. And writing can be very helpful during the grieving process, whether that's losing a job, a kid going off to college, losing, you know, somebody to a death, kind of a transition. We give each other, ourselves grace for those kinds of things, but don't expect it to come all at once. And the journaling could be very helpful for the grief, but it's not the only thing, right? You want to be taking extra naps, practicing self-care, eating healthy, going to sleep, exercising even when you don't feel like it. All of these things will bring back your natural joy. You may need to talk to somebody. I went into a grief group. There may be a transition group. But so writing is not a replacement for a healthy life or the kind of things that get you through a difficult transition, but I believe it's one of the key ingredients. When your joy starts to come back, the journal can help you. What do I love? And then I like to take myself on a walk, sit and meditate. What do I want to do today? And just follow those tiny whispers towards a new passion. And if you trust it, it will come back. And if it's absolutely not there, talk to somebody.
You know, I want to highlight something that you said, because it really ties into mental health and well-being, but it's that intuition. It's that listening and trusting what your body needs. And so we started today talking a little bit about using writing to slow down so that we can actually sort of witness our thoughts and get a little bit of distance from the jumble. But you just said that it's important that we ask ourselves, what do we feel like doing? And if the answer is, I feel like taking a nap, that's okay. And so I think a lot of times we've disconnected from that intuition and we maybe don't trust ourselves. So for the people who are watching who are like, okay, that's fine, but you know, what if I always want to take a nap, or what if I, can I trust what it is that's whispering to me? What would your thoughts be for those people?
Well, I would say we know what creates a balanced lifestyle. It is sleep, healthy food, and exercise, and yes, naps. And we need more naps when we're grieving. We need more naps when we're in transition. When I was finishing my book, I needed more naps because I would do some creative output and then I would take an hour nap in the afternoon and I would always get creative insights. Have your journal by your bed and when you wake up from your nap, see if there's an insight there. But there's a fine line and we have to be wise about, is this deep depression and do I need to go talk to a professional? That's different than a year-long, grieving with the death of a parent or 6 months being in transition or loss when a kid moves out. And yeah, you can be happy for a while and then go through a transition, but there is a difference with clinical depression and you might need some support.
Absolutely. And so if I'm at home and I'm like, okay, I'm going to start this. I'm going to start listening to what my body is telling me and I'm going to take one step. What is the one step that you recommend these people who are maybe in a transition? What are the writing? Do you have a writing prompt? Do you have something that would be a great starting point for those who are watching who are in a transition?
I would make a list of things you love. Like when I was a little girl, I loved to swing. When I was a little girl, I loved to sing. I loved to dance. Make a list of the things you've loved your whole, in my teens, I loved this, in my 20s. So make a list of what you love before the thing you just lost. And then make a list of small dreams. It could be as small as, I wanna go out for a coffee with a friend. I wanna go on a hike tomorrow. I want to get to bed earlier tonight. Whatever it is, make a list and let it and start with small things so you're building that trust with yourself that you will do, you will take yourself out for the coffee. You will get yourself to bed an hour early if that's what you want, or you will let yourself watch a favorite show. It's like build the trust that as you write that, and what will happen is as you do that over time, not the first day, but over time, you will build that self-trust that you can write down and allow yourself to dream into the future.
I think that's phenomenal. And unfortunately, we are getting close to the end of our segment. So I just want to sort of wrap this, folks. Like when we're in transitions are a part of life. We have them all the time. Sometimes they're joyful transitions and sometimes they're harder, but transitions don't mean our story is ending. They just mean that we're starting the new chapter. And so writing is a form of allowing us to transition to that new chapter in a way that's curious and more fun. And so I really like this. And I just want to reiterate, if you're in this, a list of what you loved when you were younger before the job that you just lost or the person or whatever it is that you're transitioning out of. And then the small dreams, the small things that you would like to do so that you can start to build up towards bigger ones. Up next, we're going to talk about how to raise writers and help kids and teens to find their voice in a world full of screens. We will be right back after these messages. In a world of screens, short videos, and constant scrolling, are we losing something deeper? Are we losing the ability to think and express ourselves through writing? Writing isn't just an academic skill. It's a tool for emotional development, creativity, and confidence, especially for young people. I'm here with Laura Joan Cornell, and we have been talking about the benefits for mental health and well-being and through transition. But there's something even more important for those of you who are parents or have children in your lives. It is so incredibly important that we work with our children, our teenagers, to develop a skill set that will help them with their mental resilience moving forward. So Laura, I'm gonna dive in. Why is writing so important for emotional development and children and teens?
That's a great question. It's really important. So as a species, we have a brain and we have attention and it can be pulled. It can be pulled to social media. It can be pulled to watching the TV. It can be pulled to a ping on our phone. But we also have the choice to direct our attention, to create. And that's part of the development of our species, the intellectual development and the development of the frontal cortex for us as humans, that we have the ability not only to be consumers of creativity, but to create. So if you think about the Renaissance, they were painting, they were writing. And as a child needs to develop that ability. A child needs to develop the ability to not just consume what the teacher says, but to create their own ideas. And not just to watch TV and watch social media, but to be clear on their own ideas, whether that's through painting, creating a song, writing a song, and writing is one of the ways that we get our sovereignty of our brains, right? So as a teenager, especially, there's so many distractions and teenagers are developing emotionally. How are they going to fit in with their peer group? And if they're just watching other peers on social media, their attention is being distracted, and it's a big tendency and a danger even in teenage years. But when they have time for journaling, even turn off the screen and just write, they get to practice autonomy. They get to practice directing their brain towards their own thoughts. And that's very stabilizing and grounding for them. It will develop their capacity to know what they think.
You know, and that's incredibly important in an era where there's so much disinformation and dissemination of propaganda and other things in so many arenas. Even in the classroom, we're told what to think oftentimes. So talk to me a little bit about what we're seeing now. And children are used to, I mean, they grow up communicating through text messages. Like, we're in a generation where the parents grew up with phones. And so what happens when children grow up communicating mostly through these quick digital messages? And how can writing help with our communication development with others? Because we are social beings.
Absolutely. We're social beings. And that's one of the reasons why social media is so addictive. Because we're drawn in, we're attracted, we're interested, we're watching for social cues, but it's other people's social cues. We're not creating our own. So social media is addictive, and it's not only, it was designed that way, Jen. I mean, the creators of all of our most popular platforms, especially the ones aimed at teens, are designed to get you to just keep scrolling, wanting the likes. How many likes do I have? That like button is addictive. And you go back and you look at your posts, especially teenagers and young girls are very susceptible. There's been some research around the teenage female brain being very susceptible to social pressure and social influence. And so when they see other girls, they're constantly judging themselves. Am I prettier? How do I fit in? How do I look? And I'm not saying to take kids away from social media, because they need to fit in. They need to know what's happening. They need to know how to use these tools, but they need a balance. They need a time when the social media is off and when they are interacting with real humans, whether that's their family or their peers at school or in other social settings and sports. And they need a time when they are expressing their own thoughts slowly with handwriting away from social media.
So I know what I'm gonna get. Well, that, how do I enforce this? How do I do this without it feeling like a punishment? Because for so long, what has been the punishment for kids? Well, if you do that bad thing, I'm going to take away your phone or your tablet or your TV. So for the parents out there, how can they encourage writing, journaling, so that their children, their teenagers can have these important developments without making it feel like a punishment or like homework?
That's a really, really good question. If there were any way to avoid having being taken away your phone as the punishment, I would love to see that, because I think kids need to understand that there needs to be a balance of healthy time on social media and healthy time off. I will say we had our niece visiting. She was, I'm going to think 15. And we said, we'd love to have you visit, stay with us for a week here, but we're going to put the phones away at 9 p.m. We put it in a safe and we turned off ours. She watched us so she could be on the phone. I said, you can stay up as late as you want. We did not give her a curfew. Stay up as late as you want, but you're going to read books. You're going to read magazines. You're going to have this beautiful journal. And She actually went to bed the previous year when she was here with her mom. She never slept because she was on
Wow.
her own all night. So, I would try to move away from it being a punishment and just talk to kids about what happens in your brain. There's movies, there's things you can show them actually about what happens in the brain and how these apps were developed to be addictive and what is an addiction. Kids need to know what is an addiction. And it's okay, it's not bad to be on social media. As a parent, I'm on social media, and I also have times when this is our dinner time and we're going to put all of our phones from the entire family in one corner, and you all do that together. The parents put their phone there, or the mom, or the dad, or the grandparent, or the aunt and uncle, and the kids do. We're going to talk to each other, or we're all going to watch something together, and now we're all going to write together. So if you make it about their healthy development, like you're in sports, you're in writing, you're in a summer camp, and you also have social media time, and we all take time away.
Yeah, and so I think I want to highlight what you just said because this happens a lot. And it looks something like, okay, kids, we're gonna have no screen time, but then the parent is still texting or on the computer or whatnot. And you know, I'm a parent, I'm a grandmother, and it's really interesting to watch in the role of grandparent what happens when we tell our children no, but we then are interacting because they pay attention to what we're doing as opposed to what we're saying, and they learn that way. So I think it's really important. I want to highlight that Laura said, set a time when you all do this together. That way, you're not only saying, okay, we're going to be digital free, but you're being digital free and you're creating an environment that's fun and that people can look forward to. Keeping it playful, folks, is really important. And so instead of it feeling like a chore or a punishment or something along those lines, what we're doing is we're having family time together. I had no phones at the table. Like, that was a rule in my house. It's still a rule in my house. If we're at dinner, we're not on our phones. And so I think it's a really important point to drive home. So I'm going to ask you, when kids learn to write their thoughts, when they start a journaling practice, how does that actually help them better learn to understand themselves or get in touch with themselves? Because the parents out there are going to want to know, how do I broach this? How do I speak to my adolescent, my teenager about beginning this and in a way that is helpful to them?
Yeah, it's a great question. You might start by giving them a really nice journal. When I was a kid, I had one with a little lock in it. Like, get and show them your journal. You know, say, oh, this is how mom does it or grandma does it. And sit down together, sit on the couch together, go for a walk together. Say, now we're just going to spend 5 minutes writing our gratitude list, or and you can keep it private, you can keep it secret. Kids love secrets. But maybe they'll, you say, maybe if we write 2 pages, we could each read each other our favorite sentence, and the rest can be a secret. I think pen pals, I know it's an old-fashioned idea, but pen pals with somebody their age, like a teenager in another country, or a very different lifestyle than them, different ethnicity than them, different city than them, can be really fun. Writing slows the thoughts down, and you can tell them, explain why this matters. Say, we're on social media, you have 500 activities. So once a week, you and me are going to sit down together and we're going to journal together. Do it with them and then give it to them, and they can write in it extra days if they want. Say, you can use this if you're feeling sad. You can write about your sad day if you have a breakup, if you have a bad test at school or got into a fight with somebody. You can write about it in your journal. You can use it to brag about yourself. You know, show them how you use your journal if you're willing to share.
That's fantastic. And I immediately go to, let's make it fun, folks. Like, this is about making it fun. You know, it might look like gratitude journaling at dinner. It might look like a weekend creative writing challenge. One of the things I do with my grandchildren is we make books for each other. And so they can illustrate and they can talk about the story. The ones who are too young to write, we do the writing for them, but they can tell us the story and we can get that down. And so it's become a creative family endeavor. That's joyful because it's a gift for the sibling or the parents or whatnot. So how can you make it fun? And how can you create that weekly space where it's something that you do together? Because when we create memories and we do things together, that's when we really know that kids are learning to write to understand themselves and to take this to the next level. So we do have to take a brief break, but we're about to be back talking about AI, because I know you're going to ask, AI journaling and the future of what the human voice looks like in a world of algorithms after these messages. Don't miss a moment of this show or any of your favorites streaming live and on demand whenever, wherever you want. Grab the free Now Media TV app on iOS or Roku so that you can have instant access to all of our lineup. Prefer podcasts? Listen anytime at www.nowmedia.tv. From business and lifestyle to culture and more, Now Media TV is here 24/7. And now we'll dive right back into our topic of conversation. And I know this is a topic everybody wants to talk about. AI can now write essays. They can write poems and entire books. But does that mean that our human voice is becoming less important or more important than ever? Technology is changing our creative process, but it's also raising important questions about authenticity, connection, mental health, and well-being. Laura's here because she works with writers navigating this new landscape as a writer and a coach. Laura, how do you see AI changing the future of writing?
Oh my goodness, this is such a huge conversation. It's changing it really, really, really fast, really dramatic. Now, as we're filming the show, I just heard an echo. As we're filming the show, you can already use AI to finish your writing and get your stuff out there and produce more writing more quickly. You can dictate your writing and then AI will transcribe it and you can come in and edit it. So it's easier than ever to be a content producer, to finish your writing and get it out there. A lot easier than when I was, let's say, finishing my book. But yes, based on what you said, I think that the human voice, real authenticity, like real humans having a real conversation like we're having today, is becoming more important than ever. People long for real relationships. We still need belonging, and you cannot belong to a computer. And humans want to trust. One of the things that's happening is because it's easier to put out content than it ever was before, for the reasons you mentioned. There's less trust. People are like, is this AI? So there's people are like, I don't know. Maybe that sounds like AI. I'm not going to follow. Oh, this video. People, their screens are up. Their trust filter is up. And so when they find somebody that they can trust, they relax. And that comes from being real. That comes from making mistakes. That comes from what I just said. Oh, I heard an echo. You know, that's real. That's me being real with you. And so we're having a real conversation. That is more important than ever.
Absolutely. And so I'm going to ask the next question because I see it all the time. And, you know, in business, we do a lot of content creation. And I did go down the path and made an avatar of myself and did some generated content that I sort of dictated and had to clean up. And I quickly moved away from it because I don't like the fact that it's not me saying what I'm saying. You know what I mean? And so, like, I have used the tools and pulled back from some of it because the one thing that I noticed is it makes everything uniform. Even if we're putting our voice into it and we're dictating to it, it sort of makes things uniform. So I had to shift my workflow and I had to look at it like I have to put my voice in, look at what it says, and then tweak it a little on the other side to make sure it didn't lose my voice in the process. So talk to me about how people can leverage AI tools to become more creative, to really enhance and leverage this in the content creation or in their creative process without risking their voice being lost in the process.
Very, very important. I'm going to give you two examples. So I went to an obituary almost a year ago for a friend of mine who died. And I had to write an obituary. I wrote it all myself, but then I asked AI just to put the final edits on it because I didn't have a lot of time. And this was actually an online obituary. I slept on it. Now, because I had written it, I remembered it really well. And I thought, I had three anecdotes of my friend Giselle. And I thought, these are out of order. I'm going to change the order. I was able to, I would have had to do a lot, taken maybe half an hour to finesse all of that. And I was able to say to the AI, don't change my tone of voice. That was my very clear instruction. But please change the order and switch these anecdotes so that that one flows into that. And it was done like that because we were also packing to go out of town that day. So because I had really done the work and in my heart, I had written the story and I told it, don't change my tone of voice. It was able to change the order of the anecdotes. Last year, I was writing a chapter for one of my books and it was called Story Medicine. It was the life in a battlefield, the birth of story medicine. It was about why I believe that story is medicine. And I dictated it on a walk in my neighborhood here and it came out at 10,000 words. Now my limit was 3,000. So I had to get it down to 1/3. I went section by section with AI and I said, shorten this, shorten this, shorten this. And every time it did that, I went back in and I fixed it. So it sounded like me. I said, don't add any words I did not say. Significant words, I mean, prepositions, fine. Don't change my tone of voice, but make this shorter. And I kept, editing it as it did it to make sure that it hadn't added words or done weird things. And then I ran it through an AI filter. And I said, would you please tell me, did AI write this? And it said, no, 0% chance that AI wrote this. So those were two ways that I've used that. And I think you and I had this conversation before. Always start with human eyes, put something in. You can have some editing done in the middle, or you can also brainstorm topics with you, but you have to come up with what topics your real people want. You can't let AI generate your topics. It can suggest them, but you have to decide, is that really a topic for my people? Yes or no. And then I hate bland writing. And if I get it from any of my clients and I'm like, I think AI wrote this, and I will show them AI knows that AI wrote this. I said, this is not good. We're not going to write this way. So I always lovingly tell my client, point out how it's gotten very bland to my clients if they did that. And but always put a human eye on it at the end and, be expressive. Say what you really think. Be funny, be weird, be nerdy, if you have an eccentricity, be eccentric, because AI will water that down. And so if you use AI as a writing partner or editor, you tell it, absolutely, do not water me down. Do not get rid of my eccentricities. Let me be weird, nerdy, geeky, whatever you are, and maintain that voice, and then go back and check and edit after if you have used AI as a partner.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I'm like human input and then edit the output. And we want to make sure that we continue to decide. So I'm going to bring us back to a conversation we were having earlier and ask your take on it with AI. And that's, we talked about journaling, we talked about writing and processing emotions, but so many people now are writing to AI, whether it's ChatGPT or Claude or what, pick your AI, it doesn't matter, as if it's a friend or therapist. Is this healthy? And how is this different than us actually journaling?
Well, I'm sure there will be research studies on this in the future. I haven't seen one yet. So I'm going to give you my opinion. I think that AI can be a very helpful partner in certain conversations, like getting ready for a conversation, thinking through difficult issues, even sometimes medical issues, emotional issues, but it lacks the whole context, right? So when you're in a room with somebody, when you're talking to a real human, a real therapist, they know you, they know your past, they have their own filters. And so like when we're in a room with somebody, and even on Zoom, like right now, I'm picking up on facial cues from you. I'm picking up on the level of your smile, the level of your enthusiasm. AI is not going to do that visually. And there's 1,000 times more input visually than cognitively. AI is only the cognitive side of the brain. So there is a layer that it is missing. Is it helpful? Yes. But if you notice that it is replacing human relationships, I think that's a danger zone. I mean, if I spend a little bit of time on my computer sometime, and I work online, so I spend, all my authors are online. Yes, they come here for retreats, but mostly I work with authors online. But I also have human relationships I have friends, I have community, I have places I go, I have neighbors, I have a dog, I have a husband, I have family members and friends that I see and I can touch and hug. And if I ever noticed that a relationship with AI was replacing a human relationship, I think that's a danger zone. And I don't think that AI can replace a human interaction. And there have been examples of suicide, like adults, and you may know more about this than I do, suing the AI for talking, you know, agreeing with their kid about, yeah, you should kill yourself. So it doesn't have that reasoning layer that's human.
You're right. You're right. And I just, we're drawing to the close. So I just want to wrap this really quick, folks. AI is built to tell you what you, to agree with you. Like that's its job. It's to agree with you. And so it's a dangerous thing if you're replacing it with humanity. So in a world full of noise and algorithms, your voice matters. Writing is not just about communication. It's about connection to your thoughts, your purpose, and the story you're here to tell. Laura does that. How can people reach out to you, Laura?
Oh, thank you. Well, I have a gift called the flowformula.how for anybody who wants to practice embodied flow writing. So you get into your body, you do a little meditation. It's about how to get out of, how to get out of overthinking into your body and into flow. I have my book, Moon Salutations. This is on Amazon. And I'm starting a Substack. It's substack.com/story as medicine. So you can find Story as Medicine Substack. We'll be writing about how stories can help us to maintain our human connection in the face of AI and how we can heal ourselves through telling our stories and heal our world.
Thank you so much for being here. I appreciate your enthusiasm and your wonderful gift of wisdom. Thank you, Laura.
Thank you for having me, Jen.
And you, yes, you, unfortunately, all good things come to an end, including this show, but you do have action steps. Get a journal in a color that you like, with a pen in a color that you like, and just start your process. Write 5 minutes a day. Maybe it's gratitudes, whatever it looks like for you. Start that practice so that you can improve and up-level your mental health and well-being, your self-care routine. Writing is very powerful. Without further ado, we do have to go for today. I'm Jen Godet. This is Vital Signs. We will see you same time, same station next week. Have an amazing evening.